You're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Shelby, can I get up off the floor for this, or do I still need to be chained up for the podcast?
That's your choice. I gave you informed consent. I gave you multiple options, and you chose that. So
that's not what happened. You came to my room in the middle of the night, and you said, "I'm going to treat you badly for forever,"
disgusting.
Because I want to make somebody else jealous. And I said, okay, but I had never done anything with anybody.
I'm excited to talk about this a lot. I'm very excited about this. We're talking about Wuthering Heights, Emerald Fennel's quote unquote Wuthering Heights, which is pretty controversial. It's pretty messy. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I said at the beginning of this year, like this was one of my I'm looking forward to this movies, mostly because I am not a fan of the book. Like, it's not something I treasure or hold dear. And so the idea of someone coming in and just like doing whatever with it, I support that. I applaud that. Plus, Emerald Fennel is like my kind of messy. Like, it seems fairly harmless the way she the way she puts her lens across the world. I love her aesthetic at the very least. And like her stories have been interesting, even if there's very, you know, logical and correct criticisms of said work. You know, her first movie, Promising Young Woman, we both liked, but some people were like, this is kind of like romanticizing, like, and it's like supporting a system that doesn't actually support victims, and like it's a police fairy tale, blah blah blah. Okay, fine, I get it, but I still enjoyed a lot of it. And similar to Saltburn, it was like, that's insane, that was so fun and off the walls. Did it necessarily do a great job of critiquing wealth and classism? Maybe not. You know, she herself is a very privileged woman, and she just isn't maybe the one to break down classism. And I'm okay having Saltburn as just a film that's fun to watch. So I expected sort of the same for Wuthering Heights, but it's been pretty wild how viscerally people hate this movie.
I mean, I do think there are people who do like this movie as well. Like, I went to my friend, former podcast guest, Sierra, for her birthday. She was like, oh, we're going to do like a Wuthering Heights movie night. So a bunch of us went. We went last night. So that would have been Tuesday. So the movie has been out, what, like 5 days, 6 days, something like that. So I was like, I was not expecting the Tuesday night showing to be like that packed. We had to go to the IMAX because it was the only theater that like had that many, like 8 seats together still, because it was so sold out. The IMAX was completely sold out. It was packed with people. People were like sobbing in the movie. I like my group, I don't think necessarily like loved it, but some people did like it. And then I definitely heard comments from other people leaving the theater about how much they liked it. So it is, but yes, but then if you go online, people are like ripping this to shreds.
They are defensive.
I think the thing with Emerald Fennel is that she's just sort of like, blitzkrieging her way through these films, where it's like, she's interested in the aesthetics. She's interested in like sort of the shock value of different stuff. And she likes a good twist, but it doesn't feel like she's thinking about anything too hard. And then like, what is left in the wake are all of these critics and people like really like parsing over through things like, oh, but like blah, 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 and oh, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, she did not think about any of this that much. And she's on to the next project, like ready to rip to shreds something else, sort of bulldoze through it and have everyone left in a tizzy. And like, she's not thinking about that at that hard. Like, we don't need to be thinking about it that hard. However, I will also say, like, this movie is really bad, and I'm so excited to talk about all of the different ways that it sort of like, is a disaster.
But
not in like a hand wringing sort of way, but more in like, oh, this is so fun.
Well, that's the thing is like, because I walked into this movie knowing like, okay, it's getting 1 star. Everyone's like, this is an insult. The highest liked review on Letterboxd is, Emily Bronte died of tuberculosis, but this is still the worst thing to ever happen to her. Oh. And I just, yeah, it's like anyone posting a TikTok about it, all the comments are like, this is the most important novel in English, like whatever, it might be true. And there is a divide where it's like 49% on Rotten Tomatoes critic score, but like an 80% audience score. So it's one of those splits where you either like it or you don't, and everyone has an opinion about the other. So it's like the people who hate it are like, the only people who like this have never read a book in their lives. And the people who like it are like, all of these purists are just like no fun and they should just be able to relax. And there's so much serious criticism around this piece about like the colorblind casting, the Heathcliff isn't white, actually, this is about an abuse and having some sort of BDSM kink is insulting to victims everywhere. And it's like, I don't know how to like navigate art in a landscape where like everything has to mean something more. Like everything is a stand you're taking. Because yeah, I watched this movie and I had a good time. I feel like I enjoyed it for what it was. And I do think Emerald Fennell did a good job of warning people. Like, this is just an ode to how I first felt reading the book. And you can feel any which way about what must have been going through her mind that that's what she took away from the book. But it's like, she wasn't trying to say this is an honest, you know, page to screen adaption of a novel. Like, it's just fanfic. Yeah.
No, I mean, yes, that's why she put the quotes in the title. Like, she was really trying to get ahead of the fact that all of these people were going to go see this and be like, well, that's not like the book. And she's like, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point of this is not that this follows the book. However, I am sort of left after watching it of like, well, then what is the point of this exactly? Like, I get that we don't need to follow the book exactly. However, I'm also like, what is this? And how? And I am very, I would love to be the child psychologist who could sit down with 14-year-old Emerald Fennell after she's just read Wuthering Heights for the first time and be like, oh, this is the version?
But that's that is accurate. It's the same thing with like Jane Eyre, where it's like, everyone's like, that's so romantic. And it's sort of like, well, you take 3 steps back and you're like, no. Or like Romeo and Juliet. It's like, I'm sorry. What are we trying to convince ourselves? Like, I think we do just, especially as kids, especially as white audience, we just like absorb things in dumb ways, in the most simplistic ways. And if there's a romantic line in a book that makes you like catch your breath of someone being like, well, then haunt me then. It's like, oh my God, that is romantic, you know? Like, it's like, you do kind of, like, I remember girls in high school being like, oh, Heathcliff is such a bad boy, but like, I get it, you know?
In the Mormon high
school. In the Mormon schools, yeah, it's the Twilight effect, you know? It's just like, it's the 50 Shades where we can convince ourselves that a little bit of bad is good.
The thing about Romeo and Juliet is like the whole point of that is sort of that young love is kind of stupid. Like, it's these two people and they're so young and they barely know each other, but they're so infatuated that they're willing to sort of like screw up all of these things and eventually die. And you get to the end and it's like, wait, like none of this needed to happen.
Yeah.
It was just that is the craziness of Young Love, that you're like willing to do these bizarre things for really like no reason, but you just are so like swept up in the chemicals of it all, which I don't really think is the point of Wuthering Heights.
Right.
But I do like get that that is sort of what she's going for. It's just like, I don't know. I was thinking about this, and then obviously because of the Jacob Elordi effect, I was also thinking about Frankenstein a good bit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I do think, and then I was trying to think of this like trend, and I was thinking about Call Me By Your Name as well, of like books that these famous directors supposedly read when they were younger and were like obsessed with and have been waiting their whole lives to adapt, and then adapt it and seem to completely miss the like very
Frankenstein
obvious,
is not a part of that
point of
Frankenstein was a good adaptation
no,
of what that
was
book
not.
Was about. That
it
is literally the exact themes of the Mary Shelley intention.
He was like, let's not have the monster kill the girl because we want the monster to be nicer, which is like not the point.
That is the point is the monster isn't naturally bad. The monster is reacting to a situation. You
but
know what? I can't get
anyway.
Into this Frankenstein debate, but the Frankenstein, he clearly cared about his source material. You can't say he didn't.
I'm not saying that they don't care about the source material. I'm saying that they somehow care about the source material so much.
You admittedly haven't read Frankenstein in so long. You forgot half the plot, and you can't presume to be a better expert than Guillermo. Stop it. Stop it. Let's focus on Wuthering
Heights. Wuthering
Heights.
I didn't realize that
please.
I was wandering into enemy territory with the Frankenstein obsessies.
Well, I am curious, like, because I walked out of that and I'm like, you know, there's like you're saying, there's a lot of book to film adaptations that are completely different than their book. You know, like from anything from like Jaws to probably one battle after another, and we aren't as like possessive of the original text or whatever it is, it doesn't get the same flack. But it's like, how much of this discourse could have been spared if she just called it like the Moors, you know, like if she hadn't claimed the title, would there have been more forgiveness?
Well, I mean, definitely. Like, if you're adapting a book that no one has read or a book that's not that popular, then I don't think that you are as required to I mean, I don't think you're required to stick to the book no matter what the book is. But I think if you're adapting something that is really beloved by a lot of people, especially a classic that's like been around for hundreds of years,
yeah.
I think that there is an expectation that you are going to follow the book, be true to the book, be true to the book's messages. And I think no matter how closely you stick to the book, you're still going to have people who are like, well, the dress was blue in the book and it was green on stage, so I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
But
it's
yeah,
like,
I think,
it's like Clueless. Think, it's like The Lion King. It's like...
Right. I do think that if she had done sort of like a... Because I think even with like Emma, the more recent version of that, like because
that.
She sort of set that... Like, that was set up from the start as like, it's the book, but it's like a completely different style. Like, it's Emma, period, or whatever. That people were more fine with that. And I think the fact that they was like...
But she added quotation marks, Matt. It's the same. It's like, punctuation.
I think part of it, though, is that the Emma adaptation was like, okay, it's Emma, but we're going to make it funny. And this is like not really exactly the same story. But no, I do think if she had made like the quote-unquote the Moors and was like, oh, it's inspired by Wuthering Heights and the characters could sort of have the same name, but it's a different story.
Yeah.
I think people would have been more... people wouldn't have had the same expectations going in, even though she did do a good job of setting up.
Like from the first trailer, from the first cellophane dress still, like I feel like the entire promo cycle for this has been people being like, this isn't period accurate, and her being like, I don't want it to be. This is how I felt. This is that. It's just supposed to be a love story. It's what my 14-year-old self wanted to believe it was. And like, yeah, I'm not saying it's like even beyond how she did with just that as her inspo. I just feel like it's weird how obsessed people have been with this not being a good adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really no way to argue with those, with that people. Like, it's like, yeah, this isn't a good adaptation of the novel, but there's also like been six movies of Wuthering Heights that also were varying degrees of good to bad of the novel. So it's like, it's not a very easily adaptable novel. Like, no novel has gone past the first part because it's fucking weird that Heathcliff like exhumes her body twice and that he takes their respective children and manipulates them into a love story he never got. And it's a weird book, okay? And it's like fucked up. So it isn't necessarily something that should exist on screen. And that's where I get like, that's honestly where I get like, I like some of the changes she did in here because it was more palatable. Like, making Isabella not fully an abused victim was more palatable than watching an abusive relationship on screen. But I'm being shouted at by people on the internet who are saying, well, that's a disservice and that's misogynistic and that's, it's not what the book is. And it's like, well, yeah, but you still have the book. Like, if you want to read about the horrible people and the terrible things and the awful abuse, it's still there for you.
I think that Wuthering Heights and this movie in particular is a very weird situation because I think you have like three different things that are going on. You have the original book as it was written by Emily Bronte, which I think is not really a love story. It's mostly about just how like obsessive Heathcliff is and all of the like terrible, horrible things he does. Yeah, and Catherine. Like, that they're both bad. But just like the class system, and then also just this love like rots all of these people and turns everything into absolute misery.
Yeah.
And it's not really romantic, and it's not, and I don't think that's really the point of it. Like, so little of the book is spent even with Catherine and Heathcliff together. Like, she's dead. She's not alive when the book starts. She's not, like, he's gone for chunks of it. Then she's dead. Like, they don't really spend that much time together. And if I'm remembering correctly, I don't believe that they, like, have sex at all, do they?
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely. No. There's no sex in Victorian except literature.
Except for the fact that he's maybe has sex with her corpse.
Yeah.
But so there's that. There's that version. Then there is whatever this version of that I think a lot of the, like, I think in a, some fans appreciate the, like, actual version of the book. But then there's this version that fans have in their minds, which is like, oh, this is a romance, sort of. Like,
a star-crossed, like, tortured lovers. Like,
right, yeah. Which I don't think is accurate to the book or what the book is saying, but is what is living in the minds of all of these people who are like, oh my gosh, Heathcliff, like, daddy, only, I love him, whatever. Then there's Emerald Fennell's version of the movie, which also isn't the book, but also isn't this, like, weird romance version, sort of.
I don't know, I mean.
I mean, it is, it kind of is the version that people want, but I don't think that the fans of the book who think that this is like star-crossed lovers want this like BDSM sort of element to it necessarily. So it's crazy because it's like she's not making the version of the, she's not making the book version, but she's also not making this like version that the fans want. And so I feel like there's three different groups of people who all kind of want a different thing. And the movie is sort of not giving anybody what they want.
Just vibes.
Right. Other than Emerald Fennell. Because I don't think a lot of people, at least as far as I'm aware of, have been like, oh, you know what I would actually love is like a version of Wuthering Heights where they chop off half the book and put in a lot of sex scenes, but then also add all of this BDSM stuff.
Like, it is sort of very light on the BDSM. The sex is like vanilla, from Isabella. Yes,
but not for like Wuthering Heights. It like starts with like a corpse erection and everybody like fucking because they're seeing a dead body. And then,
because we're animals, we're baseless.
And then there's like the skin wall and the eggs. Yeah. And there is like a lot of, I don't know. There's a lot of sort of like she's sticking her finger in the gelatinous fish mouth. Yeah.
Who can resist? Honestly,
who can resist?
That's an impulsive thought we've all had. I would give this movie a solid B. I felt like I liked it. I felt like I had a good enough time, and I think it was carried by the, you know, costumes and set and lighting and all that. Which everyone's like, that's not even Emerald. And it's like, yeah, sure. I think that visually this movie was very compelling to watch the details. I do think the weakest I don't know. It's not like a movie I want to like go to bat for necessarily, but I do feel like one star is a little extreme. Like everyone needs to chill out.
I think I gave it 2 stars. I did like the vibes of this.
Yeah.
I thought that like the music, the sets, the costumes, whatever, were all very good. I love the sequence in the middle that's the Charlie XCX song with where they're all just like hanging out.
Her
and
fashion,
everything
yeah.
is over
Her
the top,
slutty
and all
little
of the
glasses.
Bows and the dresses yeah. and the glasses. Yes, that I loved. I sort of think that Margot Robbie's bad in this.
Yes,
like
yes.
She's given a difficult task in one, I don't think the script is great. Two, she is old.
She reads old,
playing
yeah.
various younger ages, and it's unclear as to how old she's supposed to be.
At the very latest, probably like 28.
Well, yes. Like in book years or whatever. I don't know if that's like changed in in the movie. Like the thing that's confusing that I think would have been helpful is if at some point somebody said the age, because I think they could have just aged everybody up and been like, okay, like this character was 16 in the book, now she's 27, like whatever, who cares? But they
no,
never
like playing
they never
yeah,
say that
adults.
And so especially early on she is playing like petulant teenager in a way that's sort of weird from a woman who looks like she's almost 40, you know,
all respect. She's gorgeous. Work. She looks great. She really rocks the deep red costume. Like she's gorgeous. I'm not trying to say
stunning.
She looks matronly, but it is like they do read old. They do read like, okay, this is a little bit extra coming from a 35-year-old.
Right.
You know?
And Jacob Elordi, I think, makes the choice of, you know what, I'm not going to do any sort of age. Like, I'm just going to be Jacob Elordi in all of these scenes, whether it's the flashback, the flash forward, the whatever. Like, I'm not going to try to do different ages in my acting.
Yeah.
Which,
he's basically his Euphoria character, just in costume.
Yes.
He's basically
just like hot person. Like, he's not really required to do that much. And I think he is fine with that. But then his sort of stoicism and him not changing character makes her sort of over the top character choices just all the weirder, especially in the like the scenes where they're younger, sort of before he goes away and then comes back. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was not great. And then I also did think that, I mean, I don't know. Like, again, I don't want to get too caught up in the book or whatever, but I'm like, I do feel like it just sort of missed the point of everything that was like,
there was no, larger message. It was very much a star-crossed lovers story of everyone's keeping them apart and the tragedy will forever be that they're separated from one another.
Because it's not, I think that this is a very easy movie to make in the 21st century about class. Which I don't think this movie spends that much time actually focusing on.
Care at all,
There's also the racial element in the book, which a lot of people have brought up in their critiques of this movie, which aren't here because they cast Jacob Elordi instead of someone who's, you know, black or like Middle Eastern. So I think that there is a version of that that could be kind of interesting that's not really here. And then even the different characters, I don't think were that. I think that the most interesting character is Isabella. Like, she's the one who sort of pops off the screen that you're interested in. You're like, this is somebody who I want to know more about. The rest of the characters, and I think Hong Chow's character, Nelly, the like servant like slash companion. Companion, whatever her thing is. Like, I think that she also has some interesting elements where you're like, what's going on here? Like, she kind of just hates all these people, so she's fine to like.
Well, I saw a review that was like, every single actor seems like they're in a different movie. Well, and I feel like that was very apparent with Nelly versus Kathy and like, and then Isabella just doing her own thing. And yeah, I don't, yeah, I think that's where the movie faltered, was trying to figure out the other characters' motivations, because really it's just like it really is just a sort of haters to lovers trope of two people who want to fuck each other so bad they're fucking each other up, and yet then you have Nelly here, who's supposedly sort of like the bad guy who's like keeping them separated, but also doesn't seem that motivated to do it. It's like almost happenstance the way it goes. So she's not really given the meaty role of like true puppeteer. She's just kind of like floating around. And I wish that she'd been given more. Because like the thing with Kathy and the thing with Margot Robbie's performance is that it does just feel kind of like whiplash, where she's always like, she'll be like, oh, Nelly, I hate you. You fucking suck. And then the next sentence, she's like, I'm sad. And like, yeah, that's part of the personality of the book. But in the book, it's much more manipulative and like, and psychotic. And here it's like kind of just convenient how it plays out, to never make Kathy look too mean and to never make her look too cruel. But then it's also like, well, you're behaving like a child. So I don't know. It was just like a weird dynamic.
She's kind of horrible in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this, yeah, we're definitely supposed
she's
to see
kind
both
of sad girl.
Her and Heathcliff is like way more sympathetic and less bad. Yeah. But again, we don't get enough really backstory as to why either of these people would be sympathetic, other than she has a father who's like a drunk, kind of like.
I mean, yeah, I think also, it's pretty. I mean, he's abusive, and it seemed to imply sexually abusive towards her.
Because
in the first scene when she's a little girl before Heathcliff, everyone's like, oh no, she doesn't deserve this. He's going to come home. It's going to be awful. And she's like hiding in her bed. And then you hear him kind of make a mess in the kitchen and then start up the stairs and open her door.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick up on that, I don't think.
Yeah. And then Heathcliff finally steps in and sacrifices himself at one point. And that's like when they... their like final kid storyline, where he's like, I never want to see him hurt you again. Like, I'll do anything. I'll sacrifice my whole.
Is that a part of the book as well? Like,
they're physically abused. I don't know if sexually is ever talked about or implied, but physically, both Kathy, Heathcliff, and Nelly are very physically abused.
Yes. And I did know that. Like, because I thought the father was sort of like not as bad in the movie as like he could have been, you know, because he sort of seems like kind of nice in some parts, and he is like very like, he's obviously a drunk, but like not a
he's manipulative. He gotcha.
Yeah,
he gotcha.
Okay, I have a question that I'm really confused about. In the book, Nelly is just a servant. She's not like this companion person or whatever. Like, and then also in the book,
I think she's kind of a companion, isn't she? It's been a long time.
I think she's just a servant. Like, I'm looking up the book description now, and it just lists as Nelly is a servant to the three generations of the Earnshaws and two of the Linton family.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
But then also in the book, Isabella is just the sister of Edgar. And in the movie, there's the like, there's the like, oh, she's his ward.
Yeah. Thing. Well, it's because they, like, the colorblind casting, they wanted the white actress, but they wanted to throw bone to.
Oh, was he not white?
No, he's like Indian.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that's why they did that. I didn't pick up on that. I was like, okay, that, like, I'm confused as to why they're just not siblings, but okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. Answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else were we talking about? Yeah, I think Margot Robbie was sort of bad in this. And okay, another question I had is, was she actually pregnant in the movie version? Because in the book, she is pregnant, she has a child, and then dies in childbirth, or dies right after childbirth. In the book, in the movie, she's talking about being pregnant a lot, but she never looks pregnant, and it's unclear again with the timeline, like how long she's hooking up with Heathcliff after she finds out that she's pregnant, but it never seems like she's actually pregnant. And then she's bedridden, supposedly, again, like she maybe lost the baby, but then she says she was pregnant. No, she actually didn't. But then how long was she pregnant for that she never showed any signs of being pregnant?
I mean, because, like, okay, so they're doing it like rabbits, supposedly every day, but even that, it's only been like, there's only like a montage of like 15 different.
But she
sex scenes.
She realizes that she's pregnant before he even gets back.
Yeah.
And then he gets back.
So health class. Okay, so you can usually discover you're pregnant by a missed period about 4 to 6 weeks after your missed period, you know, after the intercourse.
Right. Okay.
So then you're 6 weeks along of a 40-week term. And so then most women don't usually, quote unquote, pop until like week, 25 to 30, depending on, you know, your stature. She's corseted quite a lot. And also, you know, I don't think they're focused on the minutia of whether or not she has a little bit of a belly bump, you know? And so
we just kept going and going. Yeah. Then, like, he goes and marries Isabella, brings her back to the house. She's chained up in the garden. Like,
which, again, has been
in
like
bed for a long period of time. Like the fact that
she's wearing billowy nightgowns by the time they break up.
Probably like an hour of this movie where she's supposedly pregnant, and she never looks pregnant. And I'm sort of like, if she was pregnant, why aren't
Margot Robbie like film Birds of Prey while pregnant or something, and you didn't notice? Like, that's what I'm saying, is like, I think you're miscalculating how pregnant people look.
Like, sure, but I'm like, why, like, why didn't they just stick, like, give her a belly at some point?
Well,
and then I was like, the fact that there's like this question of whether or not she is pregnant or
it's not whether or not she is pregnant. It's very clear she is pregnant. She says she is pregnant to both her husband and her lover. But then she says, I lost the baby.
But then Nellie's can. Yes. Yes. And but then she didn't lose the baby. Apparently.
Yes, she did. She lost the baby. The baby was dead. The baby was dead. And that was what caused her sepsis.
And that's why she got the sepsis?
Yes. So she had a dead fetus in her stomach bleeding into her.
And they couldn't
poisoning
get it
her
out.
Blood. Yeah.
And then
Know if they even know how to treat that sort of
thing. So then why was all the blood coming out of her at the end?
Because
she finally died?
Because visually she wanted it to. That was a lot of blood. But yeah, if it's like the uterus was finally shedding or whatever. Like, it's like if you have a miscarriage, you bleed out eventually. If you have some sort of ectopic pregnancy, even, you would bleed out. So yeah, I think.
Far be it from me from wanting a more anatomically correct weathering home.
You just wanted a sad little fetus to come out.
No, I was just confused.
Yeah, the timing. Then, yeah, sure. They were having a lot of sex. The timeline was
And every
vague.
Time that, like, that, you know, like another 10 minutes would pass and another plot point would happen and she still wasn't pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, looking pregnant. I was like, did I miss a scene? Like, did I sort of like glaze over at some point and someone had explained what happened? Because how is this woman still like not clearly pregnant when whatever? And then also because of the book, I was like, I'm pretty sure she has a kid.
Yeah.
So I was like, is she going to get pregnant again? Or no, is the what? I didn't realize that we were changing that. Yeah. So it's like, oh yeah, no, we're actually getting rid of the kids.
Yeah. It ends with us.
Yes, it ends with us. The yeah.
So, like, yeah, no, I think on close inspection, like taking this film away from the adaptation element, it's not necessarily the strongest writing or characterizing, and it does kind of just lean on tropes heavily, where it's like
very heavily
sad little rich girl can't be with her poor lover, marries the wrong man, regrets it until the day she dies, an untimely death. And so it did ask a lot for us to care emotionally about Kathy, but for whatever reason, Margot Robbie was just struggling to sell it. I think in part because the script was kind of thin, right? There's a lot of montaging, a lot of panning shots of environment and scenery, and less concern about character building because she knew people were coming in with the book. But yeah, I was, I think, honestly, the best part was sort of this play on the Isabella and Kathy and Heathcliff dynamic. And that that felt fresh and fun and interesting. Like even Isabella as a character, like the actress just stole every scene she was in, but sort of this like sheltered little girl who's making art, not realizing how phallic it looks, or cutting up vagina pop-up books and not even recognizing, like it's like, and seeing her slowly like turn into this jealous, repressed, desperate individual. I had fun with that. So I was kind of, I don't like being called a misogynist. And so when I saw reviews that were like, Isabella deserved better, I was sort of confused because it gave her autonomy and like choice in a pretty toxic landscape. So is the problem that it's like normalizing toxic relationships, or is it that it robbed a strong character from a book of having that narrative arc in this movie? Like I really enjoyed that he walked into her room ready to seduce her and gave her complete like clear terms of engagement. Is that wrong? Am I a misogynist? Like, I mean, it is definitely like
when she's making that decision, it is, you are thinking, okay, she's young, she's never done anything with anybody, she's so enamored by this person who is so like sexy that she will say yes to whatever, and then will she end up regretting this at a later point? Probably. However, is she sort of into the dog stuff
scene? Yeah, she's kind of like giving it back when he's like demanding she write these pathetic letters,
right?
And she's like, oh, why don't you can't because you're a stupid idiot.
And
I thought it was like clever to let her have some of that power. And like, yeah, so I was okay with that twist.
Well, and she is by far the most well drawn out, like interesting person of the cast. I think because this character is sort of changing from the book. In the book, she doesn't really have much of a personality. She's sort of just like there as a character piece for Heathcliff's revenge. And then she dies.
She runs away. She finds her power and she leaves him. And then maybe she dies, but I don't know. But the idea that I've seen is that in the book, she's like seen as this, she gets out type of thing. She recognizes the trauma and the toxicity and finds the courage to leave.
Okay. I'm reading the, while pregnant and fearing for the safety of her unborn child, Isabella manages to escape to London and give birth to her son, Linton. Isabella raises Linton as a single mother until she's 12 and then entrusts him to her brother, Edgar, before she dies.
Yeah.
So she does die. So she gets away and then she dies. But her son ends up back at the house, which is what I was going to
say. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think that this is just a lesson in writing good characters because she has hobbies, she has interests, she has things that you can tell
ribbons.
Oh, this is who this kind of person is, and then I think the actress does a really good job of like bringing characterization to her. But like alternatively, when you think about Catherine, it's like, what? Like, who the girl is she needs as to a relax. Person?
Yeah.
Like, is she a tomboy? Like, kind of, but that's not really like what her character is necessarily. Like, is she the rich girl? Is she like, she doesn't really have a characterization other than like, oh, she's just friends with Heathcliff, but they're also sort of in love from a young age, you know? And I think it's the same with Heathcliff. Like, we don't really get very much about him other than like, oh, he was poor, he got adopted, and now he's obsessed with Catherine. And then Edgar, we get even less about other than he just like has this weird house.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is like, I think they should have made Kathy meaner. I think it works best when she's being cruel, like when she's jealous of Isabella and playing mean in that drawing room or whatever, like torturing her. Like, I think that makes the character more interesting and the situation more, you know, like dynamic, rather than just this flat forlorn lovers.
Yes.
And yet they seem really scared of making her unlikable. But I think the movie could have been romantic even if they were still the worst people on planet Earth, you know?
Yeah, there definitely is a version of this where it's like two horrible people who fall in love. I'm trying to think of, I feel like we've seen that recently in some sort of story, and now I can't remember what it is, but like, this like toxic, really hot, like, oh, but I, like, we are also horrible people and we're going to ruin things for everyone else, but like, we are bad together kind of a vibe.
It's like the Reese Witherspoon sex challenge movie.
Oh, like Cruel Intentions.
Cruel Intentions. Yes. Uh-huh. And I think that there could have been more like to play with there if they hadn't been so scared. Because really all Margot does for the most part is look sadly out the window or across the moors. She doesn't even like scream Heathcliff's name, even though I think that's a major part of her story arc in the novel.
She cries a ton.
Yeah.
She's constantly crying in the movie. I think this is interesting then to come back to the Emerald Fennell of it all, because she said in an interview before the movie came out, like, oh, this isn't, you know, Wuthering Heights, the book. This is sort of like my version of Wuthering Heights. This is the version that I like remembered or thought I remembered, or things that, you know, like I wanted to happen that didn't happen. Like, it's so interesting that this is the version of these characters that she wanted, which is kind of like, we're going to strip away some of their bad qualities. And it's going to be this forlorn love story. I'm going to forget large chunks of the book that have that do anything against that.
And what if there was more Tool?
Right. And this BDSM element that sort of like comes through it. But it's so fascinating to me that you would read that book and like, then this is the version of the movie that you would make. Not saying that like it's, you know, not that you can't do that, but it's just a fascinating psychological experiment of, oh, like I'm sort of going to like misremember things so much that the only things that are kind of the same are like the location and like some of the plot points, but not even really all of them. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, what is a book that we both love that, like, we would adapt and then, like, screw up in that way?
Well, I don't know. Because it'd have to be a book I read once and then never did anything again.
Right. It's like I love Anna Karenina. And I could see somebody being like, okay, I'm making Anna Karenina. It's 800 pages. Like, I'm going to sort of chop out the entire, because in that book goes back and forth between the storyline of Anna Karenina and like her having an affair. And then this other guy who's very obsessed with like economics and servant uprisings and whatever. And I could see you know, someone adapting that novel and being like, okay, the part that I remember, the part that I like is the Anna Karenina section. I'm going to get rid of that whole other guy and all of his character plots and just focus on her and the affair. And like, I think that that would make sense while still like sticking true to the novel. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, if you were like, oh, I'm going to do Great Expectations, but I'm actually going to make it like just a romance the whole time.
And Mrs. Havisham did get married.
The end. Yes. It's like, huh, okay, well, that like really then you're sort of, you know, not doing like justice to what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, as I read criticisms of it, I like get it. Like, I get that this movie doesn't work. I think being able to separate this movie from the book as a you know, genius discourse on racism and abuse and all of this and turning it into some sort of, you know, light erotica. Yeah, I can see how that feels damaging. I know, that's, I think that's my saving grace, is I don't care as much as other people, and that's fine. And I'm glad people do care. But it just feels like in bad faith to be like, this isn't as good as the book is at XYZ. Therefore, this movie is actually completely harmful and should be erased from our psyche and never should have been made. Because it just feels kind of like, okay, I mean, yeah, this is just a bad adaptation. And like, you know, like Anna Karenina, some people love that. Some people hate that movie. Some right. people think the vibes were enough. Some people think they left out too much. And it's like, I think that's the point. Like, I don't think high schoolers are going to watch this movie and think they can get away with passing a test on the book, you know? And if that is what happens, then it's just like us growing up with that Scarlet Letter movie where, is it Demi Moore takes a bath or something and is highly sexualized? Like, I just think bad adaptations have always existed, and it's like, take it or leave it. But to act like anyone enjoying this movie is actually harmful to society just seems kind of extreme to me personally.
Yeah. Oh, no, I definitely don't think it's like harmful or whatever yeah. by any means. And I do think it is sort of a fun adaptation. It's
yeah, the music funny is so in great.
It's sort of bad, but it's bad from a point of view of like, what is the point yeah. of view of it?
Yeah, yeah, the, yeah. It's like, very pretty.
And like, we, if you want a truly accurate version of any like famous novel, the BBC has done it. Like, I'm yeah. sure there is a BBC miniseries of Wuthering Heights that is accurate and has yeah. all the characters and yeah. follows everything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like Pride and Prejudice. Like, I remember when the Pride and Prejudice movie came mm-hmm. out with Keira Knightley. Mm-hmm. For as successful as that was, there were people who were like, this is very not as mad. Accurate to the book as I want it to be. And so therefore the BBC miniseries like yeah. is the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think with, you know, with especially with Jane Austen, it's like there's been the sort of Clueless like adaptations yeah. that are more like modern set. There's been obviously adaptations yeah. that are more true to the book that are either good or bad yeah. and that have different points of view to it. Yeah. I think that Jane Austen novels are easier to adapt because they are more of a like, they're more what? Of a genre that we're what? Well aware of. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, a gothic horror is pretty hard to.
Well, especially make. Wuthering Heights, it's like, yeah. what is this? Like, what is the point of
this? It's like, and damn, I think, everyone's named Heathcliff, everyone hates each other, everyone dies. It's like,
right.
okay, you get a lot of discourse about racism and classism, but like, it doesn't make for a fun movie.
And at least Jane Eyre is like, we are following one character from the start to the end. Like, here's the story of her life. It goes through various sagas. Yeah. Where this isn't even that, because in the book, it's like a stranger comes to the house mm-hmm. and that all of these it's people who are miserable, and then Nelly like tells the yeah. story, and you're not really sure in Nelly's retelling like how much of it is actually
correct
versus I think, how much of it is her sort of changing things yeah. or that she doesn't know stuff that
yeah.
happened
yeah well, and that's why I'm like, I've seen like a few interviews or a few reviews that are like, oh, making the only people of color in the film, Nelly and Edgar, be the villains is definitely a racist choice. And I think they're giving too much credit to Emerald, because I don't think there's a villain in this movie. I don't think she has a perspective to give it that sort of like rise and falling action and cause and effect. Like, these are just people bumbling about a very beautiful set. And I don't read either Nelly or Edgar as villains ever in this movie. I think it would have been more interesting, but they're not. Yeah.
Edgar is giving nothing. Edgar is, like, he is a non-factor.
He is a prop in that little hand fireplace room.
I think it's interesting to look at this and compare it to the Little Women adaptation from Greta Gerwig. That just felt like Greta Gerwig had such a strong point of view and knew exactly what she wanted to do and the message and how she was going to do it and the way that she, like, tweaked things and adapted things and shifted stuff. Like, it just all worked so well and was so smart. Yeah. And this was just not that in any capacity. But I do think there is a version of Wuthering Heights that could be really interesting if you played more with the unreliable narrator sort of thing of, like, okay, like, this man shows up to the house and he's getting these, like, different versions of the stories from the different people who are still alive. And, you know, we sort of get, like, reenactments of these different scenes, but told from different perspectives that look different, sort of like in 500 Days of Summer or whatever, you know, where you sort of see it from his perspective or her perspective. And then at the end, this character is kind of left puzzling over which of these narratives is correct, or is it some sort of amalgamation of that? And in that, we never see Kathy because she's dead by then. And so we just get these, like, different views of who Kathy was from different people. I think that could be really fascinating. I'm like, I think that there are some cool ways that you could do Wuthering Heights. This, I don't think, is one of them, but I think there are, like, I think if a smart person got their hands on this book, there's a lot there to unpack.
Well, of course. And I think that's, like, she admittedly wasn't curious about the, like, themes of the novel. And
she admittedly wasn't curious about much of anything.
Yeah. And it's like, I think I even rewatched Barbie last night with Penny, and I know you don't like that, but I was like, man, this movie is, like, every detail, like, matters. Whereas in this, you have this, like, egg motif, but it doesn't really matter. Like, it's like there's a lot visually she's toying and tinkering with, but it doesn't actually, I couldn't write, like, a thesis on the importance of eggs in Emerald Fennell's Wuthering Heights, you know? Like, it's just kind of, they're just there. They're just, like, memes. They're just throwaways. And that's an aesthetic that I enjoy because it is so, like, lush and beautiful and fun. And her little rosy tinted sunglasses will forever live in my mind. And, like, the velvet swing and the flesh colored walls. Like, I think that's all a lot of fun, but I do think it does not hold up to any sort of, like, through line of thematic world building or character building at all. And so I can give the critics that.
I'm very fascinated by her sort of career in general, Emerald Fennell, because she's primarily an actress. And then she was on The Crown. I feel like that's probably what a lot of people know her from. But then she wrote, directed, and produced Promising Young Woman, which obviously gets her an Oscar nomination and does very well. And then since then, she's worked on Killing Eve. She wrote a bunch of episodes of that. She wrote and directed Saltburn. She wrote and directed Wuthering Heights. Also, lest we forget that she wrote the book for Bad Cinderella, the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. But I think something that's interesting to me, like, I think she is a very good visual director. Like, all of her movies are really beautiful. I sort of would love her to direct something that she didn't write.
Exactly.
I think that
exactly.
I think that if somebody, like, it's not like you and I really know that many screenwriters, but I'm like, I think if she got, like, a really strong script, she could turn it into something really beautiful. I'm trying to think of a movie that was, like, well, that has come out recently that was, like, well written but didn't What was the movie with Phoebe? What's her face? Yeah, I don't think you liked it. About the dueling like stockbrokers who are in a relationship. Do you remember that? Like a couple years ago. Like that feels like something where it's like the script was really strong. The movie kind of looked whatever, but I feel like if she had gotten that script, she could have really like made the cinematography and everything like really pop. I guess that's a little bit more. That's like sort of just like a modern day set New York thing. So there's less to do. But yeah, like I like if she got something that was like set in outer space or I don't know, like some sort of fantasy.
If she got a script of Wuthering Heights, you know, like and they wanted to sort of Romeo and Juliet it, like that's fine. But I do think like that's part of our problem with culture at large is there is this like obsession with individualism, like doing it all on your own. And that's like born of these creatives who are capable of storyboarding and are capable of directing. And so you have your Jordan Peeles and you have your Greta Gerwigs, but then it's like, you don't have to. People used to just direct movies and not have to write them too. Like you can take a break from that, from like this need to pair them both for it to be only yours and yours alone. And instead, like, just focus on what, on one thing, like one thing, please. Like, you don't have to write it, direct it, produce it, and storyboard it, you know, like, just try. Try one.
And yes, there are directors who can do all of that, but a lot of great directors do sort of go back and forth, you know, like Steven Spielberg like doesn't write all of his movies. Martin Scorsese doesn't write, like, you know, sometimes they have other people come in and write them. And also, I think that some of the more like auteur directors that we've had recently, like Jordan Peele, like Greta Gerwig, like it's not that they're bad directors, but I think that they are better screenwriters. And I sort of feel like it's easier if you're a good screenwriter to then direct a like fairly good looking movie with a strong cinematographer that's going to help you rather than it is to like be a bad writer and then try to save a poorly written movie in the director. Like Lady Bird, you know, it's like that's one of the greatest movies of our generation, I think, but that's because of the script and because of the performances. Like when I think about that movie, I'm not like, oh wow, she really directed that car scene. You know, like she kind of just stuck the camera on the car and like let Saoirse Ronan like fall out the door.
I can see why it feels like, oh, that's not my baby. It's not my project. But it is true that like Emerald Fennell's strength is not, it doesn't feel like she's like desperate to get word to paper. It's she wants to get pictures off the page and like, I think she can easily co-produce, you know, work with a writer who has an idea and be like, oh, but what if we made it like this? And I think that that makes more sense for her is that she does tend towards style over substance. So someone else needs to provide the substance.
Wait, I'm just realizing that Emerald Fennell was in Anna Karenina.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you know that?
That makes sense. Really, that's where she got this. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, yeah, I don't think this movie does exceptionally well at any one specific thing that could have saved it. Like, yeah, they're both hot, but the charisma, the sexual chemistry isn't necessarily like there in an interesting way between Jacob Elordi and Margot Robbie. And then, yeah, like the characterizations, they're just not full bodied. They're not that interesting. And the sex itself is pretty like mid. You get a pretty 2000s style montage of them like banging each other in carriages, but it's not like sex forward in a way. There's like 2 hours before there's sex. I felt like hour at least.
And the BDSM element doesn't really extend to them.
Yeah, not at all. I thought
that when she sees the servants with like the riding crop in their mouth, I thought that we were headed in a way that was like the two of them were going to have a lot of sort of power dynamics
and tears
between them.
Licking fingers.
No, it was mostly just crying and then like a lot of some like tongue and fingers in mouth.
Which was good, like, which was hot. It worked.
Which we liked.
We liked it, but it was like 5 minutes of sex. So it's like, if you wanted to make...
The movie was long. The movie was long. Like,
because there's like 30 minutes at the end where Nellie's just like, she's fine. And she's just sad looking out a window. And there's nothing going on. It's but not also, even pretty.
We got to the point and I looked at my watch and there was a half hour of the movie left. And I was like, what has the first like hour and 40 minutes of this been? Because I feel like he hadn't even come and gotten Isabella yet. I was like, what? Like, we've spent so much time and we have gone through so little plot of this book.
Yeah. Because like, it's just
vibes.
Yeah, it's just vibes. It's just sad lovers who finally get like one happy montage before reality sets in.
Pissed me off when the dad dies and there's like those piles of bottles behind
him. I was just thinking of that. It felt very Guillermo del Toro more than anything ever done.
It felt very Guillermo del Toro, but it also felt very like Looney Tunes.
Sort of, in a way
that did not fit with the rest of the movie. Like, obviously the sets and stuff are stylized, you know, there's like the skin wall and the latex and whatever, but it wasn't like cartoonish in that regard. That was like, he's an alcoholic. Like,
a room of just bottles stacked lovingly in.
Yes.
In
I mean, it was a gorgeous shot. Like, it looked good, but it just did not fit with anything else, especially since, like, we had heard about that ribbons room, but we never see that ribbons room earlier. Like, I don't know. It was just crazy to have that one shot of all of those bottles when you're like, okay, I know those aren't his bottles.
Yeah.
Like, that is, like this like, is not realistic.
Yeah. Did Heathcliff come in here and, like, sweep them all to the side? Like, who's stacking them in these corners? Well, did you have a favorite look? Did you have a favorite visual moment?
I really did like the moment where it's raining and he sort of like puts his hands over her eyes. Mm-hmm. I thought that that was really sweet. And then I also like the moment where he like grabs her by the bodice and like lifts her up.
Yeah.
I thought both of those scenes were really well executed.
Yeah.
And then I loved the montage. The montage in the middle with the Charlie XCX song and the like goldfish in the fountains and them playing the game, like, and all of the dresses and the Christmas trees and whatever. Like, that I felt like was so strong. Yeah. Like, that was
the movie.
Scene
That's it.
Is like, oh, this is where Emerald Fennell shines. Like, in these like over the top, stunning things that have no words, no plot, just vibes.
Honestly,
and
nothing to do with anything.
Right.
Never like, revisited.
Get her to direct some music videos or something. Like, she would be so good as the director of like a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory adaptation or something. You know, like, it's just like. So that's just like so
vibey. Cruella 2, like, directed by Emerald.
Honestly, not a bad suggestion. Like, I do think she would be good at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if she wants a franchise, like, there you go. Give her Cruella 2.
Exactly.
You know, somebody else is writing the script. Not that the script will be any good, but somebody else is writing it.
Yeah.
And remember when the dogs pushed her mom off the. off the side of the cliff. Remember that? Crazy.
Yeah.
That movie.
Yeah.
And supposedly we're getting a second one. Let me look up. You talk about something. I'm going to look up when Cruella 2 is supposedly coming out.
Yeah, no. I feel like as I watched the movie, I was like, oh, this isn't as bad as everyone said. So I liked it. Walking out of it, I'm like, okay, I don't know if I'd ever feel the need to revisit this again. I do think visually and costumely there was a lot to love and chew on, but yeah, it's unfortunate that they didn't spend more time on the like father-daughter dynamic or something to give the emotion like actual teeth, because in the end it was just all to get to a sad music video styling of their hookups before they inevitably lose one another forever.
Apparently, there's been no real update on Cruella 2.
I mean, Emma Stone's been, like, winning Oscars for the last 4 years. So, like, what is she going to do?
I mean, it looks like she signed the contract for it. So, it looks like the script just isn't done.
Yeah.
Maybe that we got to get Emerald in there, have her work on the script.
Pitch it.
Knows? Who knows? Is Emerald Fennell working on another movie? Do we know about that? I'm going to look that up and see if she has any upcoming things on her IMDb page. Because I am like,
I mean, intrigued. I kind of doubt it and that anything's been announced, because this was such a big, you know, moment. It was a pretty expensive film. It was a consuming promo cycle.
Yeah, I don't see anything from her. And like, this is doing well, I feel like. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The rage bait really works.
The controversy is coming. It is one of those things where, like, the movie is sort of bad, but then there's people who hate the movie, and the people who hate the movie hate it for a reason that's like not actually correct, I think. and so then
it just builds, like, great word of mouth.
You kind of have to defend it. And then it's like, why am I defending this movie? I didn't even really like this movie, but now I'm sort of defending it for no real reason. Like,
well, you saw it with the group. People. What was the vibe? You said they all liked it enough.
I mean, I think people liked it more than I did. I got to the end and was like, okay, you guys, like, that was crazy, but whatever. And then I turned to the girl who was sitting next to me and she was crying. And I was like, huh. Like,
okay, at no point it wasn't for any, you, Matt.
But like, at no point in the film, it like ever did any piece of me have any sort of impetus to cry or feel sad. I was sort of like, this is
good
wild and entertaining and sort of gaggy, but I'm not like emotionally attached. But then a lot of people were crying. And that as we were walking out of the theater, a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, like, that was so good, whatever. I mean, obviously then people were also like, well, that was crazy. Like, the woman was tied up like a dog. But
I feel like it was like fun. Like, people were having fun. Like, it was funny to start with the heavy breathing, thinking it's sex, and then it's a man.
Yes, it's a dead person. Yes.
And it was funny to see Isabella like pull her shoulder down to try and like seduce Heathcliff. So it was like, it was punchy. It was like, you go there to hate it, you either walk away enraged or giggling because it was so over the top. Or I guess crying. I didn't witness any crying in my theater, but.
Here's a question for you. In the sort of cultural legacy of Emerald Fennell, she's made three movies now. Which of the three of them do we feel like will have the most enduring legacy? Because I kind of think that it's Saltburn, even though I think that like Saltburn like did not get any Oscar nominations, and I think Wuthering Heights like has sort of made more buzz. But I think like the eating the cum out of the bathtub and the scene of him like dancing naked through the house and the humping the grave, like I think all three of those are just like cultural things that are cemented in a way that I don't know what that would be from Wuthering Heights. And I feel like Promising Young Woman has already sort of like disappeared from memory in some regards.
I would say probably Saltburn, unless it's only based on amount of people talking about it, and then probably Wuthering Heights takes the cake.
At least for right now, it
does.
In a year, do we think people are going to talk about this?
I think it will forever define her strengths and weaknesses. I think this is the movie that, you know, third time's a charm. You either hate her or you love her. And this is the one that captures it all.
You know what just popped into my mind that I actually think is maybe a problem for this movie?
Oh, yeah.
I think if you make a classic book adaptation, you have to a certain degree, be thinking about, like, will this movie get classroom airtime? Because I think there's a lot of, like with the version of The Odyssey that's coming out this summer, the Christopher Nolan one, I'm like, okay, not only will that be a movie that does well in theaters or whatever, but I'm like, that will be a movie that gets watched. I don't know.
Because you can't watch rated R.
Can you not in schools?
Not in Utah.
Well, but I'm like, you could watch clips maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
But I'm like that's the type of thing where I think that would get like, or you know, like the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice. It's like, that's a movie that like everybody watches in school when you read that book. And I unfortunately do not think that any schools are going to be showing this version of Wuthering Heights to their classrooms.
Yeah, no.
So I think that hurts it in the like cultural cachet of it all, because people who read Wuthering Heights in schools will watch a movie version of Wuthering Heights, but it just will not be this one.
Well, I would argue it will be this one, but then they'll be confused or failed. Or
I don't think that a teacher can show this.
Oh, version. Yeah. No, no. A teacher will not be passing this along, but a kid reading Wuthering Heights will be like, oh, great. Margot Robbie. Let's watch it.
I guess, but don't you, like, didn't in school you had, like, I don't know, we, like, got assigned to watch movies or, like, watch them in class. Like, in high school and in college, we would do this. And I think that, like, nobody's picking this version.
I don't know if I ever...
I'm like, there's so many
movies. Was told to watch an adaptation with a book I was reading.
Like the Romeo and Juliet.
Maybe we watched The Crucible. No, we would not have watched Romeo and Juliet. It's too slutty. Sorry.
How slutty is it?
Probably not at all, but I...
We watched that in college. Okay, so actually, yeah, wait. Your opinion, like our... We need to get a public schooler on the podcast.
I was in public school.
I'm pretty sure they roll... Well, yeah, but I mean like from a non-Utah perspective. Like, they, like, roll in the TV thing.
Yeah. But that was like, more for history. Like I would watch Glory or, like, Remember the Titans, you know? It was, like, a history class free day where we would just watch a historical film.
See, I feel like they do that with English class free days, though. Like, I remember watching a version of Great Expectations in class. I'm trying to think of
maybe, like, Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, definitely a lot of Shakespeare versions.
Yeah.
Like, I could even see, like, somebody watching Hamnet in a classroom maybe at some point. Like, if you're doing a unit on Shakespeare and, like, this is what the Globe was like. but I'm like, nobody is watching this version of Wuthering Heights in the classroom.
Well, yeah, no.
And if you're already reading Wuthering Heights and watching a different version in school, I don't know how many people are then being like, oh, I'm a goody two-shoes and I'm going to go watch the Margot Robbie version, unless you're just obsessed with the book, which in which case you've watched the Margot Robbie
version. Or
you're
like, man, I wish this book had more sex.
I wish this book started with a hanging with an erect penis.
Yeah. Life and death are so interconnected, don't you think?
Have you ever watched someone die and then gotten horny? Yeah. Yes.
Me? No. Yes. Personally, no. Okay. I haven't had the pleasure.
Yeah, me
pleasure.
Either. Maybe we need to go to a hanging, yeah. Sort of see what the vibes are like there.
I'll die in this house
with the nun, just aghast.
So funny.
Anything else from Wuthering Heights?
That I want to say.
Discuss
all love. But I don't think Charlie XCX's songs were the best in this. I liked the more folky songs she had. I feel like those worked more atmospherically. That's my take.
I actually hated the folky songs. Oh. When the woman came on, I was like, what are we doing here?
Like, you're like, this isn't Brat.
Well, I was just like, this doesn't really... I'm like, it's confusing to me how you have the whole album of Charlie XCX stuff.
Right.
Which I did think worked well in the scenes that it was played over. But then... And also a lot of the score elements were things pulled from the Charlie songs, even if, like, the song wasn't playing.
Yeah.
But then there was
the
just
mixing
those
of
two...
it was confusing, yeah.
Yeah, then there was just these, like, two sort of, like, Celtic songs or whatever in the middle of it. Which I found kind of to be an odd choice when I was like, well, right. Then we have all these other Charlie songs that we could pull from, or we could just use the score. Like, why do we have, and it was only Charlie songs. And then those two, it wasn't like,
yeah,
it wasn't like Black Panther, you know, where it's like, oh, there's all of these different, like musical artists who have music in it. It was an odd choice to me.
Yeah.
I, really
I feel like it
should
have been either or.
Album.
Yeah.
I think that those songs are great. And I guess I didn't really like the movie that much. So I did like whenever the songs came on, I was like, oh, like good, a Charlie song. But I yeah, I don't know. Like it was a little bit like I don't know how well these actually fit with what the movie is doing.
Yeah.
But I don't think the movie really knew what it was doing, and the movie was mostly just vibes and was kind of confusing anyway. So I didn't feel like the songs really like detracted from that at all.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very so that's it. Stuff. That's it. We did it. Wuthering Heights. Hopefully we don't get the haters. I can't deal with it. Have you made a TikTok about this? Because that's rage
baiting. Well, I made a TikTok about it ahead of time. But then I haven't made one since I saw it, since I just saw it last night. I think next week we are watching a movie that I feel like is sort of similar to this in some regards. How to Make a Killing. The Glenn Powell, murdering people. Murdering a bunch of billionaires to inherit money.
Cute.
Sort of thriller.
Okay. I guess we're not doing that one.
Well, I mean, the other option, which I know you've been pushing for, but I have to say no, is I Can Only Imagine 2, the sequel to the Christian film.
What about, I thought the Good Luck, Don't Die.
Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die?
Is that not out?
Oh, wait, that I think came out last week, supposedly.
Or Which Goat. Also, did you see Goat?
I'm not seeing Goat. I refuse to see Goat. We're not doing Goat.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
I'm Rob put went my to foot that. Down
okay, perfect. Goat. I'll watch some billionaires get axed.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. And then I think I'm gone for a week, and then we have the film rankings for 2025.
Oh my gosh, it's time.
It's exciting. And then the Oscars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where we get to talk about Frankenstein again.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I've been
Everyone's
preparing.
Favorite.
Yeah.
Well, okay, everybody. Thank you for listening. Shelby, are you going to unlock me now?
Yeah. Or is, gross. I can't even play along with this
the
visual.
Wall for longer. Okay. Everybody, thanks for listening. We will be back next week.